My faith in the British judiciary is never, or in any institution in this country, is non-existent, really. We need to restore the patriarchy.
Yes, we do.
It's like, if you're going to get them, you have to get them on points of law. You can't really get them on interpretation of points of law. You have to get them on, this is the point of law, and you mess it.
Rides on this election. It is that serious. And I am being hyperbolic, but it is, at the same time, it is that true.
You take one jump too far away from the lane that the woke people would say, stay in your lane, stay in your lane. And Jordan's lane was very much the free speech lane and the anti-woke lane. So when he's now talking about wrestling with God, I think there's a bit less interest in that.
It's the mainstream media hyping all this nonsense up with these racial industry people that are making money from it.
Maybe Farage just played one hand too many in the political world to go, right, I'm going to deal with the culture.
Unfortunately, you know, even though we're British, we look towards the US. The whole of the West looks towards the US for these situations. And so we need a solid man in the White House who can stand up to these fools, such as Iran or China or whoever. And at the moment, the only person that can do that is Donald Trump.
And welcome to another episode of Fox and Father with me, the Fox, and him.
Father. This sounds like a dramatic introduction this week.
Oh, yeah. I didn't sleep much last night, so I'm thinking, okay, fair. I'm just, my bassy baritone voice is there for you, Calvin. it's very, very sunny here. How the devil are you?
It's very sunny here. It's lovely. Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. I went to the cinema last night to watch Am I Racist? And I discovered that, yes, I am racist. that was good fun. Matt Walsh is hilarious. I didn't realize it was going to be acted. I just assumed it would be a documentary similar to What is a Woman? But he dramatized it in a bit of a corny American way, but it was entertaining. Just highlighted the hypocrisy of it all. And the highlight for me was he got Robin DiAngelo on and just exposed her for the fraud that she is, because of course her and Kehinde, not Kehinde, the other one, Kendi, are like at the forefront of all of this race hoax, stoking up tensions to make money. And so he just laid it all out. It's great, really good.
Well, before we do that, yeah. What happened with Kehinde Andrews, who called you a house Negro and a coconut, and you complained to the police because obviously it's a racial hate crime. And what did the police do?
Nothing. They sent me a text message saying, "I'm sorry, this isn't the result you wanted, but nothing's going to happen. We're dropping the charges." Like, okay, well, first of all, you could at least speak to me about it. That would be, you know, the decent thing to do rather than texting me. But secondly, if I had called him an ignorant nigger, I would have been arrested. But he called me a house Negro, a coon, Uncle Tom, all these things, and there's no consequences because it's not about color of skin. It's about the fact that he's a lefty, so-called professor of race studies. So it's okay for him to say whatever he wants. It's disgusting, actually.
But aren't you a priest, so you can say whatever you want?
I don't know if it works like that. It doesn't seem to.
It's because you're a common sense conservative, you've got a whole barrel of intersectional problems because, you know, the Christianity thing, they're really hell bent on wiping out. So
I've just done my common sense crusade. I've just had two interviews. One was about Christy Higgs, who's fighting for free speech because she was just a TA who essentially said, "I don't think we should be teaching queer theory and gender theory in school." Sacked. The other was a priest in the Church of England, in a Church of England school, who was sacked for saying you don't have to abide by trans ideology. You can abide by Christian teaching if you want. Either or, just laying it out there. Bernard Randall, he's also been sacked. It's like Christians are being persecuted and sacked left, right, and center for being Christian. Crazy.
Yeah, well, I mean, it goes to show that, I mean, you've sort of got to take it as a compliment, don't you, really? That the one true religion is always going to get...
Yep.
Beefed on, so it's
sad. I express the truth. People always say, "Well, yeah, now do Islam, or not, you know, now do Muhammad." They don't. But it's not because they're afraid; it's because they don't want to do it. There's no point. They only want to challenge the truth. They only want to shut down the truth.
I've started doing Islam. Have you not noticed? I've
Ooh.
started, so whenever I see someone going, "You are wearing the wrong clothes. It is not, it is haram. You are disgusting." I'm like, why don't you just tell everyone you're gay, mate? Because it's
Oh, I
pretty
saw that. I
obvious.
saw that.
It's pretty, just come out of the closet. We're a progressive liberal Western democracy. We'll accept
Unfortunately,
you. You don't have to go and blow something up just because you're a homo.
no. But I also went to a watch party for the debate. We'll get to the debate, I'm sure. That was good fun
Yeah.
with the local GOP. It's been a good week. My rectory is nearly done, so probably by the next time you and I speak on air, I will be in the rectory. That'll be nice.
I'm
That's
going to
kind
send you a camera. I'm sending you a camera.
of.
It's
Oh,
all
great, great.
arrived. It's all arrived at the house.
Okay.
It now just needs to be unpacked.
So you've moved out of the office. The office is gone.
The office is gone.
Okay. How do you feel about that?
I feel good about it because at the end of the day, it was lovely having the office, but it was there for the studio really, and most of the stuff that I do nowadays is down the line, so it doesn't matter where you do it. And that, so this sort of backdrop that I'm sat in the house will be replaced by a slightly nicer setup, which is getting built. They start building it next Monday.
Oh,
That'll
nice.
take 2 weeks, and then it'll all be beautiful and gorgeous, and we can look very professional together. And I will I, actually, what I might do is I might bring the camera out, and so I don't know what I'll do, but I'm coming out to the States in a week
Oh
or
yeah, of
two, so
course. Yeah. And I'm coming back next week as well.
great. I thought awkward crossover.
Yeah, no, a very, yeah, we are. We're actually swapping
Oh,
up. That's ridiculous. A
no.
very kind parishioner has purchased two Chesterfield armchairs. So I'm going to have like what we used to have in the studio. I'm going to be sat on one of those the next time we speak as well.
Amazing.
We're getting there.
Okay, so take me back to am I racist? So instead of calling it what is a racist, which I thought would have been the documentary style, like, am I racist? So he's acting as he in it.
Yeah, so he goes to a one of these groups where there's an angry black woman leading a load of white people in their guilt, and he goes there as himself but gives a fake name, and this sets up the premise for the whole film because eventually they find out who he is and they attack him, they call the police on him and kick him out, as crazy hostile lefties do, rather than saying, "Oh, Matt Walsh's here, he wants to learn about race too, let's have a conversation with him." So they kick him out. So this is his premise, the setup for why he disguises himself as Winston Marshall in his skinny jeans and his tied back hair, right? And so for the rest of the film, he goes around looking like Winston Marshall, and he trains up as a anti-racist person. He gets a DEI certificate, and he keeps flashing this card at people saying, "Oh, I'm DEI certified," and he builds up a profile. Somehow he manages to get on TV as this guy as well. I mean, it's not a very good disguise. You can clearly see it's Matt Walsh with a wig on. But he starts saying silly things like, "Let's all stand up and shake our arms and stretch our arms. We're stretching our whiteness out." And he's really taking the mick with it, and people are going for it. And anyway, he gets a group together, and he puts his own course together by the end of the film. And he exposes it for the scam that it is, because every single person he speaks to, he puts on screen how much money they got paid for him to speak to them about race. In fact, essentially for these, what is usually angry black people, but sometimes angry white liberal women, it quite often is women, preaching on race. But of course, they're always stoking racial tensions. It's never about color blindness. And he says, well, on the one hand, you're saying this, on the other hand, you're saying that. And he shows how you can't hold these two contradictory ideas. You can't pretend not to see race, but also see race, and you can't, left, right, and center. And it just highlights all the stupidity of the anti-racist movement. Goes and talks to real people. Like, he finds a black immigrant who's like, what are you talking about? I don't understand what systemic racism. I like this country. This country's great. I've managed to do whatever I want to do." And he goes and talks to some hillbilly white folk who are like, "What? You know what? My father was in the Klan, my grandfather was in the Klan, but I treat everyone equally. Treat me as a human being, I treat you as a human being. That's how it should be." And so he finds, the furthest right he finds, the furthest left he can find, he finds white, he finds black, just meets these people and just discovers that no one cares about race. It's the mainstream media hyping all this nonsense up with these racial industry people that are making money from it.
It's
But all the
just
way
so,
through, it's witty, very witty.
yeah, he's got that kind of, he's got that great quality that you have in that they in acting is this sort of deadpan, and in comedy is this sort of good quality deadpan. You never quite know if he's taking the piss or
Yeah. And he takes
not.
the piss out of everyone. You know, he gets people on our
Yeah.
side. He gets someone on who's written the story about the hoaxes. You remember Jussie Smollett and all these people that said, everyone kept saying they were finding nooses all over, and they were all hoaxes. None of them were real. They were just,
Yeah.
but the mainstream media were loving it. Like, oh, another hoax has been found. Racism is strong in America today. It's alive in America. And this guy comes on and he's talking to Mike, like, no, these are all hoaxes. And Matt's like, no, I know what I'm talking about. Here's my DEI certificate. I know what I'm talking about. He just plays it deadpan with all of them. So it's not just mocking the left. He mocks everyone, but it's all for the purposes of highlighting the truth.
I wonder why it hasn't been released here yet. I have contacted the Daily Wire people and asked them to send it over, but I'm probably low down the list of people they want to send it to at the moment. But I have sent a message to Jeremy Boring and said I'd love to review it for you. But maybe they, you know, they're very focused on America. I mean, it is
It's very American.
happy third day of Black History Month, by the way. I'm sorry I
Ah,
didn't wish you that at the beginning
because you're
of
racist, clearly.
I'm massive racist. Speaking of
I know
racism,
you are. I've read it in the headlines.
it says so in the newspaper, of course you're racist. We're preparing our appeal now for the is Lawrence a racist?
Okay.
And we're trying to, I mean, without wishing to, I don't know, you know, whether one sounds optimistic or not optimistic. My faith in the British judiciary is never, or in any institution in this country, is non-existent, really. But I think I was speaking to Andy Ngo, and it's like if you're going to get them, you have to get them on points of law. You can't really get them on interpretation of points of law. You have to get them on this is the point of law, and you messed up here. So we've collated a list of bits where they've screwed up, I think. Or I'm told, and we're gonna appeal that decision because you know I'm sort of the problem is in the same way as you've got this thing of like I'm complaining that someone is calling me a house Negro or a coconut, but I mean it's like well it doesn't really matter what Calvin Robinson thinks about it. He doesn't have any human rights because you know he's a Christian and a conservative, so it's screw him really. I don't think that's good for society though. So I do think it's worth just giving it this one last push through to see if the legal system can stop turning people into second-class citizens all the time, you know. And you read the stuff about you, and it's like Calvin Robinson says that Britain's got a problem with Islam and then runs off to America. It's like, no, it's
And that
not.
guy, by the
It's a,
way, I'm a Woody, Tom Woody, whatever his name is, for the Times. 2 weeks in a row, he's written
that's
articles about me
racist.
now. It's
That's
ridiculous.
racist.
Is it racist?
I'm a Waddy, Tom a Waddy. Come on,
I don't know what
Calvin.
it. Look, I can't pronounce it. I don't know what his name is. It's a silly name. It's not an Anglo-Saxon name. It's hard to read, hard to understand. But he's clearly got an issue with me. 2 weeks in a row, he's written these articles. I was never a fan of cover. I don't care. I don't need you as a fan. I'm not speaking for myself. I'm trying to speak for the truth. Either you're on the side of the truth or you're not. Simple. But these constant attacks just expose it. The Times used to be a conservative newspaper. What's happened?
Well, it was. I knew the rot had set in the Times when I went to a dinner party quite early after question time. No, sorry, before question time, I went to a dinner party at a person who shall remain nameless, BBC journalist. You know, when I was still invited by these people because I was sort of a trendy, edgy person rather than a monstrous racist like I am now. And there was a Times journalist there called Janice Turner, who is very good on LGBTQ and women stuff, but she's a bit of a lefty on everything else. And we, in private conversation, so if you're at a dinner party, you don't expect to become a t that to be replayed ever. I mean, it's a real break. It's a breach of journalistic code, really, to do that. And she wrote, and I told her that my mum was not well with, and she wasn't. And she wrote this article afterwards about the dinner party, straight after question time.
That's awful.
And I was just like, you
What a
scoundrel!
snake.
"You scoundrel." And I wrote to her, and I just said, "You are the worst example of why people just think the media is dead."
Mate, they're
And
horrible. These people have no moral compass. Remember that time I invited that chap into my own home from the Times to do that profile? It just came out like some kind of silly hit piece. It's like, I don't have time for these people anymore. The Independent wrote to me again this week. Can you comment on the King Leanders? No comment. I don't want to talk to you. Why would I waste my time? You guys are just going to look for any word you can twist to kind of get a gotcha moment. It's not about reporting the truth or the facts of the matter. They always editorialize. This Times guy, I'm gonna give him the benefit of trying to pronounce his name. Omiwa Owolade said Calvin Robertson is hysterical and he's a crank and he compares me to Candace Owens. This is a foreign-born journalist of a formerly conservative newspaper calling me these things because I'm against the Islamification of Britain. Like, if you are for the Islamification of Britain, you are against Britain. Get out. He said that Calvin said Enoch Powell's right. Enoch Powell was right in his Rivers of Blood speech, and I outlined why he was right on my Substack on calvinrobinson.com. So the mainstream media is not on our side, essentially, is what we're saying here.
I remember when I was at our former employer, GB News, and the little squirmy worm, Angelos Frangopoulos, came up to me. He's like, "I need to have a word with you." And I'm like, "Oh God, what have I done now? Said something, expressed myself freely. What have I done wrong now, Angelos?" And he's like, "You got to speak to Kelvin." And I was like, "About what?" And he's like, "His whole Twitter hitter is Enoch Powell." And I was like, "And and he's like, "He's got to take it down. He's a racist." I'm like, "No, he's not a racist. He was a controversial figure of his time." Turned out he was right as well. So I think you're barking up the wrong tree, Angelos. Why don't you go and squirm over there and attach yourself to Paul Marshall's left testicle? It
The
would be
way
a
that they just said, oh, he's a racist. Why was he? What was he a racist for? Like, people hate that speech. And then actually, if you look at the content of that speech, he was spot on in pretty much all of it. There are bits that I disagree with, sure, but that should be the case with a politician. We should be able to say, yeah, I agree with him on that, but not on that. This idea of like canceling them as, no, everything he said was wrong. Bad guy, enemy, evil. Like, it's just childish. It's juvenile. It's stupid. And it's, of course, cancel culture, which places like GB News are supposed to be against.
Yeah, well, it's also pure leftism because the minute they say you can't talk about something, they know it's because what you're talking about has some merit to it.
Not even
And I
that.
was.
At places like GB News, they don't care about the merit. They just care about the image. We can't talk about it because we want to be seen as nice guys. People are going to think we're horrible if you talk about this.
It's neutering, though. It's the neutering. The whole point of free speech is that you know. If people understood that free speech was defending the right of others to be offensive towards you, it would be fine. But this whole thing, I was having this conversation with Ben Habib the other day, and I won't go into the private bits of what was being said on his behalf. But what I was saying was like, you know how I had such huge relief and joy when Jordan Peterson started coming out against compelled speech and the woke stuff, and just like, my God, what a thank God. And that when he just got Cathy Newman, and you just thought, oh, I could listen to this for days, you genius. And then the problem, sort of one of the problems on our side, is we kind of develop a new persona to challenge, and so Jordan Peterson sort of veers slightly over into the theologian aspect of things. Well, no, he was always that, to be fair, maps of meaning and stuff like that. He did really break the Bible down as a philosophical text, which is probably not what the Bible you should do with the Bible, but that's just my opinion. And you get that sort of slight sense that you take one jump too far away from the lane that the woke people would say, stay in your lane, stay in your lane. And Jordan's lane was very much the free speech lane and the anti-woke lane. So when he's now talking about wrestling with God, I think there's a bit less interest in that. And you know, that's not to say that he's not brilliant on that too. But I have this sense as well with you know, GB News and Farage and people like that. It's like maybe Farage just played one hand too many in the political world to go, right, I'm going to deal with the culture. I'm going to start talking about culture. But as My friend Jeffrey says to me frequently, he's only been going to our church for such a short period of time when it comes to cultural stuff. So one will have to catch up. And it's interesting watching the election campaign, the Tory leadership campaign back here, as he's getting outflanked on the right, seemingly. I mean, whether it's rubbish or bollocks or not, who knows? But it seems to be getting outflanked on the right by Jenrick and Kemi as well. Oh, Kemi over culture, because she has been going to that. Whatever you think about Kemi, whatever you think about Kemi, she is bang on the culture. She
She's been
always
coming
has
out
been.
strong.
She's been good, and so she has been going to the church for a long time. And Jenrick is got his sort of Tommy Robinson hairdo, and he's coming out as a hard guy. And it's interesting to see that the two Tory front leadership contenders, I mean, look, they're politicians, so they're just lying anyway, I'm sure. But the two leadership contenders are further right than Farage. And this led me to the conclusion that perhaps, I mean, I'm sure they're playing a long game and it's all very well thought through and everything, but perhaps we've played one hand of poker too many. The hero of Brexit may be the one that muddies the waters of the right of centre politics in the country for the next 5 or 10 years. And that whatever happens, I mean, the conversation I finished with Ben was, whatever happens, if we don't go into a general election united when we next get the opportunity to one, should the sausages not be released, as Starmer has said, and should men not grow a cervix, as the foreign secretary says, if the right have fragmented, then we're in such trouble. And so I don't know what you think about that. What do you
We are
make
in
of this
trouble.
sort of, yeah.
I think Farage should speak on the culture. I think we've been wanting him to speak on the culture for so long. He's been obsessed with immigration. Immigration is an important issue, but he hasn't been addressing the other things that affect our country. And I think many of us have been saying, speak on the culture. And finally, he is. So that's a good thing. And he should be, because he's one of the people that can apply pressure from the right. But he has to be strong and courageous with it. And so far, he's been very timid with it. He's not facing it head on, and he still wants the cameras and the people behind the cameras to like him. You can't be for the truth and be liked at the same time. You've got to pick one or the other. And this is why it appears that Robert Jenrick and Kemi Badenoch are to the right of him, because they are speaking bolder than he is on these issues. They're not even speaking as bold as they should be. Kemi Badenoch wouldn't say which cultures are inferior to Western values. Robert Jenrick won't address the Mohammedan issue. He would say sectarian problems. So neither of them are being as bold as they could be, but it's still bolder than, or it appears bolder than Farage, because he's walking around eggshells because he doesn't want to be seen as a Nazi person on the far right. People who don't like him are always going to see him as a Nazi person on the far right. So all he's doing is losing his core base by pandering to the middle ground. And the
I
Tories will
thought.
often say, we win elections in the middle. We win elections in the, we don't win elections in the middle. We win elections at the core, at our core vote. And the Conservatives lost because they lost their core vote.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. That's why Kemi Badenoch, either cleverly or not cleverly, but I think probably cleverly, is refusing to talk about policy, because it's about principles. Conservatism, it's never had anything to do with policy. It's so weird watching that sort of thing unravel, because what are we going to be left with? We're going to be left with Tommy doing Tommy, you doing you, me doing me, all of these sort of figures that have a big profiles and big voices, and only certain of us will not turn our nose up at the others. I think it's so strange. And you're battling an enemy which we've got to the bottom of, which is, it's they are the lovers of death, the left, essentially. They love death. They love partial abortions. They love the planet, but they hate people, And I was only given some scant reassurance that this is possibly faddish, in the terms of what Michael Schellenberger was saying today, which was that a lot of wokeism, and we've talked about this before, is driven by female compassion. So it's compassion ahead of facts, it's compassion ahead of anything concrete. And that actually one has to, when one is trying to engage with the, a wannabe socialist or an overly compassionate woke person, you have to acknowledge their sort of right to speak freely and express their compassion and almost applaud their compassion before you start educating them for to use the woke language about the inconsistencies of their argument. And it sometimes feels it hopeless until you watch things like the debate. And
Yes.
you see JD Vance. What did you make you so you watched it
Well,
over there. Tell us about how it was seen.
I will, but yeah, speaking on effeminate culture and effeminization of culture, this has been an interesting one because the re response to the debate has been, oh, look at JD Vance with his beard. This is a sign of masculine toxic masculinity. It's aggressive. Women see it as this, that, and the other. It's like, who are what? Huh? First of all, who are you to speak on behalf of all women? Secondly, what is the problem with men trying to be masculine again? We want everyone to be effeminate and like you say, overly compassionate, put compassion above everything else. It's just fake and it's weak. And it's great to see someone like Vance just coming out strong on a lot of these issues. But yeah, I
Also,
went to go on.
to also tell it tell Mustafa that a beard is a bad thing, tell Mustafa or Muhammad
Yeah, exactly.
do you know what I mean? Just go out and say, look, I'm really sorry, mate. The beard is intimidating. You can chant from the river to the sea, and you can applaud, and then cry when someone gets, when one of your terrorist leaders gets killed. But we find your beard a bit toxically masculine. It's like these people are so, I just find them embarrassingly pathetic.
It's sad, anything to attack him. But anyway, I went to a watch party with the local GOP out here, and they're all grassroots Republicans because there'd been an internal battle, which was interesting to hear about actually, in that there was an establishment, there was an elite, and they controlled the local party, and the grassroots essentially kicked them out. But of course, the elite took their money with them, and it's they used their money to control it. It was a form of power, and it sounded very similar to things I've seen in the Conservative Party. But one of the chaps was talking to me saying, oh, I met Farage at a rally out here. He's one of these grassroots people, isn't he? I was like, no, it's not actually. We have exactly the same problem in the UK. Farage's party, establishment party elite, does not associate with the rabble of the grassroots of people like me, you and Tommy, etc. He is not one of us, unfortunately. We wish he would be more involved with us, but he isn't. And so we're seeing the same problems on both sides of the pond. But the actual event was great. I mean, there were loads of people there, all very supportive, all very patriotic. It was like a pizza party, so they asked me to start off by praying the grace, and people were coming up afterwards to say thank you for the prayers, and everyone was joining in with the prayers. And I thought, first and foremost, that's a major difference. I've been involved with the Conservatives for a long time in the UK. I can't remember once where anyone's ever asked for a prayer or thanked for a prayer. I can't remember, other than explicitly Christian conservative events, I can't remember the conservatives ever being Christian in that way and it being okay, not seen as quirky or weird or a bit out there. Out here, it's just normal. This is the conservatives are Christian because, of course, we are. It's Christendom, it's the West. So that was a good first sign. But the debate itself was great. I was nervous that Vance might, feel the pressure, but he really owned it and he made Waltz look silly. And of course, breaking the fourth wall all the time with his was it makes people laugh. It's witty, it's great.
Yeah, he's very good. He's a very highly articulate guy, and he is the future of the MAGA movement, isn't he? Really, beyond Trump, he's incredibly good.
Vance
And
2028.
yeah, and that's what it's going to take. It's going to take you can't if you can't talk people back into their box, their sort of crazy little box, you have to beat them back into their box, and you beat them at the ballot box, hopefully. And I think that the Republicans in America, the rhinos, the golf club crew, are receding, and the sort of neocons and all that sort of stuff are receding, because they actually have much more in common with the Democrats than, in the same way that Kennedy had more in common with Trump. It's a sort of, it's a crazy inversion, political inversion taking place, and we're all sort of sat there kind of watching it happen. And then
Lines are being drawn in the sand.
and somehow in England we've ended up with one in five people, well, actually four in five people, not voting for some idiot who wants sausages to be released from somewhere. I mean, our foreign secretary, I'm sorry to do this, but he's our foreign secretary, David Lammy.
No, how
He
did we get there?
thinks that you can grow a cervix if you have
With hormone
some,
treatment.
yeah, to be fair, he did caveat it with hormone treatment. But this guy is profoundly stupid, and he's our foreign secretary. And the idea of wonderful Great Britain, with its sort of diversity hire foreign secretary who's sent out to deal things, that I'm the whole point of my foreign secretaryism is that I'm going to talk about the climate. And it's like, that's not your job, though. That's the job of the climate one. The weird chap with the ukulele looks like he's been smacked in the face with a shovel. Miliband.
What he spent, was it last week, talking about how it's important that he's black because his ancestors were slaves and this and that and the other. We're like, huh? First of all, no one cares about you or your skin color. You're here to talk politics on behalf of the British people. What is your critical race theory nonsense all about? And then, of course, we've got Dawn Butler, who's of the same irk,
Oh,
the same
wait.
ilk, sorry.
I've got a Dawn Butler thing for you.
Okay.
I've worked on it. Hang
Oh
on.
no.
Hang on. So what I'd like to do here is I'd like to play the Dawn Butler one.
Okay.
Wait. I'll tell you what I'll do. I think I can do like a little background thing as well on this. Let me see if I can select a let me see if I can select a some sort of nice background. Okay, here we go. Here we go. Oh, what are you doing? Oh, this is great. It will work. Right. It's decided to start playing for me. Shush. Stop. Right. Function. Strings. Okay, here we go. It's a bit more serious than Dawn's, but we've played Dawn's and now we can have mine.
Okay.
You wanted to see me broken, head bowed and tears in my eyes. More fool you, you didn't realize that my strength is powered by your lies. You are the wrong one. The violent one, the weird one. Where was I? I am the chosen one because I am the Anglo-Saxon one. You see the skin I'm in, this beautiful ash white skin, the skin you don't believe. So why do you try so hard to achieve by straightening your hair and trying to look like a white bird? Says I'm working on it. It's a work in progress. It's work in progress. Hang on. For me, there is no need because I'm the Anglo-Saxon one. I am one of the first ones. I know I'm white and handsome, a lion-hearted Englishman. My skin is my protection, and you, my friend, don't matter because I am the chosen one, for I am an Anglo-Saxon one. You created a structure of grievance that protects you from criticism when the simple reality is all fake because I am the chosen one, for I am the Anglo-Saxon one. So you wanted to see me broken, head bowed and tears in my eyes. More fool you. You haven't realized my strength has nothing to do with skin color. It's bloody dull. Can you stop it, please? Do you think it's good as a work in progress? Do you think I'm making, do you think I'm doing well there?
I think that's good. You missed the, there was a rhyme there. You said there is no need. You could have gone because I'm the Anglo-Saxon breed. That would have rhymed.
Well,
But
I mean, you could have at least offered some encouragement. It's a
it's
work
great.
in
It's good. Well done. I mean, if she's gonna
it's.
do it, if she's gonna do it for her Afro-Caribbean heritage, why can't you do it for your white English heritage?
Well, my critical race theory, soon to be wife, pointed out that it's a Maya Angelou poem originally, and it was about being abused by someone. So it was about being, she goes, "You're the violet one." She's talking about, she wasn't, as far as I can gather,
Oh.
she wasn't talking about white people.
Dawn Butler's got
So,
form on this. Didn't she copy someone else's song throughout the last general election? She kept saying these words if she was profoundly making them up, but it was someone else's lyrics.
yeah, I think Dawn Butler's a bit, I hate to say it, but I'm going to lob it out there again. I don't think Dawn Butler's the sharpest knife in the
I
drawer
think
either,
she's a bit
Cal.
cuckoo. She blocked me on Twitter, you know. I was
What?
I was a resident in Brent. My church was in Brent, in her constituency, and she
I
blocked me
know.
on Twitter.
She can't do that.
Supposed
She's an elected representative.
to, yeah. Supposed to be representing me.
They should be banned from doing that. What do you make of the, I know it's a bit late for PagerGate, but what do you make of the of what's going on in the Middle East? Do you think we're going to hit World War III soon, or do you think that Joe Biden might apply some more sun cream and we'll all be fine?
Tell you what, I think there was only peace in the Middle East when Donald Trump was in the White House.
Yes.
We've got less than a month as this goes out for that to happen again. If he's not restored to the White House, we could very well see World War III, whether that's somewhere in the east of Europe or in the Middle East. Things are escalating at a rapid pace under these Democrats. And unfortunately, you know, even though we're British, we look towards the US. The whole of the West looks towards the US for these situations. And so we need a solid man in the White House who can stand up to these fools such as Iran or China or whoever. And that only at the moment, the only person that can do that is Donald Trump.
It's true, isn't it? We don't really have. I mean, do you think that the who would you, if you had to choose a victor of the conservative leadership race, who would you pick if you had to pick somebody to start redefining Britain's foreign policy?
Oh gosh. I honestly don't know who I would pick. I can't think of anyone I would want to lead the Conservative Party at the moment. I
No
can't
one.
think of any of the politicians that are actually conservative and bold. Danny Kruger is conservative, but not bold enough. Jacob Rees-Mogg is Christian, but not always bold enough with it. I struggle, Lawrence. What about you?
I reckon it's going to be either Kemi or Jenrick, and I think that's either. I mean, at least they're making the right noises. I mean, let's try and find some positivity in it.
I
They
like
are
them as
making.
people. And, you know, I've been friends with Kemi for a while. I've worked at the same think tank as Jenrick. The problem is, a lot of it's rhetoric. Like, their voting habits don't line up with the things that they say. That's the issue I have.
Yeah, it's the issue a lot of people have, I think. It's like, yeah, I'm pro freedom. What were your votes on the COVID policies? Oh, I voted with those. You know, it's all a lot of careerism is like that, isn't it? I think you've got one needs to be more radical. We're all heading into a more radical zone. So I'm coming to America to go, and I'm actually going to a Trump thing.
Hey, wow.
I can't tell anyone where or when, but I'm gonna
Cool.
go and meet the
A
man
rally.
who wrote the ma no no it's a private thing, but
Oh,
you
cool.
know, he wrote me a, when I was at GB News, I interviewed him, and he wrote me a thank you letter for saying that
Yeah.
he was a great president because he brought deterrence back to you can see deterrence when you're dealing with death lovers like the death cultists. Like Islamic death cultism and all of that, and then the woke death cult as well. You have to have, conservatives can only have one weapon, which is deterrence, which is like, if you do that, absolutely stop you dead in your tracks. But my vibe is to avoid war at all costs and avoid conflict if I can avoid it. But if you mess with me, you're going to get hurt. And the value of deterrence has been lost across the West.
Well, it's parenting standards. It's common sense. So the mother's instinct is generally, oh, don't, everyone be nice. Come on, don't do that. We know that doesn't work. The father has to say, do that again, you'll get a good hiding. There's a difference in parenting style between mother and father. And it's the same with governments. The lefty liberals want to say, oh, come on, let's just be nice to the Arabs. They won't bomb us anymore. Whereas the Trumpians will say, do that again. I know where your house is, right? It's quite simple.
It goes right back to the very fundamentals of everything, because if you look at this, if you look at the core tenets of leftism, which are, getting rid of the family and getting rid of Christianity and getting rid of God, they are so hell bent on that, and I know this from personal experience, that they would rather you gave your fealty to the state than you gave your fealty to your husband. And I've noticed in my encounters, certainly in the family court system, that fathers are like a really major inconvenience for the state to deal with, because the state thinks that A, the mother knows best, which she, if you end up in court with a woman, God forbid, because a woman that takes you to court is a savvy, clever woman. Because she knows she's going to use the state to attack you, not her own argument. And I've just sort of noticed that every single fundamental structure in this country is built around the destruction of masculinity, the destruction of family values, even broken families, which happen, sadly, and they shouldn't, but because we're all so, and I think this is true of men as well. We're all so overly keen on being happy all the time that we forget what our responsibilities are and what our duties are. And that video you shared the other day was so brilliant of the guy, of the kids saying shut up to their mum. And
That's reactive.
children are taught now that it's abuse to be told off, that it's abuse. So the state essentially is the parent already. And then we see that more broadly on the foreign policy scale. And then, what Zahil Ahmed said to me, when he said, it's all very well talking about protecting British culture, Lawrence, but Britain doesn't know what its culture is. It has no idea what its culture is.
Because we've been gaslit, because people keep saying there is no culture, there's no British culture, there's no British cultures. And the people are like, oh, we don't have a culture? We've been gaslit for so long. Of course we have a
Was
culture,
that?
it's great culture.
Yeah, I mean, with all
And
due
actually, being
respect.
out here reminds me of that. There are so many Anglophiles out here who love English culture to the extreme. I'm like, these people are more English than we are in many ways, especially I'm serving in an Anglican church, and there are many Anglican traditions that they adhere to over here. We've forgotten in England. It's absurd that we've kind of disregarded so much of our culture, but other people see it, so it doesn't exist.
It does exist. It does exist probably elsewhere. It's sort of morphed and moved elsewhere. And the Americans, the thing I do love about the Americans is they know that freedom is so good. But what you're seeing on the right in America is this idea that, there's a sort of a panic which is analogous to the Democrat thing of going, you need to vote for me to preserve our democracy. And and then on the right, the sort of woke right, you've got, if you don't vote for me, you'll never vote again. And the truth is somewhere in the middle, isn't it, really? And the truth actually comes again from why Kemi is right to talk principles rather than policies, is to go, well, what are the principles that we stand behind? We stand behind a strong family. I mean, it can't be hard for these fucking politicians. Like David Lammy, you moronic twat. You weren't a slave, Dave.
I know, I
You,
know.
sorry, mate.
I don't know where it's all coming from. I don't know what's going on with your swearing all of a sudden either. You've been doing so well,
Sorry,
Lawrence.
sorry, sorry, sorry.
But
I got animated about it.
I know I keep saying this, but I genuinely believe that a lot rides on this election. If Donald Trump doesn't win, if Kamala Harris and Tim Walz get in, Tim Walz doesn't believe in free speech. Kamala Harris is a communist. It will be open borders. The country will be destroyed out here, and it will be war all over the world. Britain won't have a big brother or best friend to stand by. We'll all be worse off. Whereas if Trump gets in, we'll have a strong masculine leader in again who believes in common sense values. He's not perfect, no one is, but at least he believes in the core things that built the West. And so he'll maintain it. And that's a good thing. I was on the National Faith Board prayer group the other day with Speaker Mike Johnson praying for Trump. And I think it's important that Christians realize that we can't wait for a perfect leader. We have to pray for Trump, and we have to help Trump get in, because if he doesn't get in, it all goes to pot. And it's all, pro-abortion, kill babies up to birth, even after birth. Like, it is evil times if he doesn't. At least he, as a sinner, recognizes he is a sinner and recognizes that he is there to serve, and he recognizes that there is one true God in Jesus Christ, and he worships him, and that's a good thing. But we can't wait for someone who's sinless to lead us, because there is only one person that is sinless, and that's Jesus Christ. And he's not gonna lead the nation or the West. But
And also, yeah, sorry.
I was invited to a call with him last night, and I haven't actually met him or spoken to him yet, but it was a prayer call. And I think what I want to say on that, well, first of all, I couldn't make it because I was going to a cinema with a friend. And as you know, priorities, friends come first, which is good. But I will hopefully get to meet him and pray with him at some point, because Christians need to do this. And I'm saying this especially to Christians who are watching this, because most people in this country, in the United States, are evangelical Christians. And most evangelical Christians do not vote. So it could be a block vote. The Christians hold all the power in the state. If all the Christians turned out and voted for Trump, landslide. Tomorrow, well, obviously a month from today, but
Do they not vote?
no, a vast majority of evangelicals just don't bother to vote, and these are even people that walk around with MAGA hats on, so it's to their own detriment. So the message is: pray for Trump, vote for Trump. And I don't care if people say it's political partisan. Yes, it is. It is, because we need it.
Well, he's defending the very values that Christ put on earth, and and also this whole stupid idea that people think that, they can somehow double blind God in working out who he chooses to be his messenger on earth. Why wouldn't you choose someone who is a bit quirky and a bit fallen? Because they have a sort of they have a more common they're more of a common touch. This idea that you've got this sort of very sanctimonious, I think it's what puts people off Christianity full stop, actually, is the fact that the most vocal proponents of Christianity, A, are the biggest frauds, like the Archbishop of Canterbury. They're not even Christians in the first place. And B, they're the most sanctimonious, boring people you'll ever meet. Whereas a good Christian is always up for the crack, and
And
they're.
actually, he uses our weaknesses to strengths. And so he uses people who are fallen and sinful to encourage other people. This is what the stories of the saints are all about: fallen individuals who are finding Christ and finding that he is the truth. I'm not very good at speaking, right? I speak too fast. I'm very quiet around people. And he's used me to speak as part of my ministry. This is a major, major thing of my vocation. Like, I know so many people who are like, who have things that they see as not very good or weaknesses in themselves, and God use turns those weaknesses, turns those bad things into good, and that's exactly what he does, and that's what he's doing with Trump.
That is what he's doing with Trump. And I think I do think Trump has had a major moment post the now totally ignored assassination attempt to reflect on his why he survived that. And and I think that would be amazing. From what I can gather, and I'm obviously no American politics specialist, but I do understand from what I understand. He doesn't need to win Arizona. He doesn't need to win Nevada. He does need to win Pennsylvania, Georgia, and what's the other one?
If he wins
I've forgotten.
Michigan, we're good.
And they this sort of narrative that Kamala, whatever her stupid name is, with her wife being, this is the other problem as well. These men that go on about how much they love women and how they always say, we want to elevate and lift up women, they always end up being the ones that give women a good slap. In the same way as you get like
Overcompensating.
the person who wants to work in the gender clinic always turns out to be a pedo. I mean, it's like
Funny that, isn't it?
surprise, surprise. So we do need a bit of straightforward masculinity actually back.
Restore the
And
patriarchy.
restored. Oh,
thing in the West rides on this election. It is that serious. And I am being hyperbolic, but it is at the same time, it is that true. But I
I
also
like
want to,
hyperbolic Calvin. He's good. He's a good
but I
guy.
also want to specify, as partisan as I am, this is our podcast, and this is where we talk about politics and current events. That does not mean I'm partisan in the pulpit. And when you come to my church and sit in the pews, you will hear from the pulpit the gospel, and I will exegete the gospel reading of the day. Sometimes the epistle reading. It's not a place for partisan politics. I want to put that out there because people sit, watch these things and get confused. And think, oh my gosh, he's a Trumper. He's going to be stood there telling people vote for Trump. Like, that's literally not what I do. That's not my vocation.
That's not what you've done either. What you've done is you've tried to say that these are the values that are, these are the Christian values, and that the person who's embodying the Christian values more than any other person is possibly the one who's the most weak and fallen of us all, which I think is a wonderful thing. Probably why Christianity can be, allow itself to be mocked. You and I would probably disagree on how much you can mock Christianity, but and certainly my father and I disagree on that. But Christianity has to, there's a strength to it that it can survive mockery. Whereas you look at these little Mohammedans going on about, you know, control, 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 final religion, final religion. It's like, shush now. So I've decided that I'm going to mock them mercilessly, especially the more ridiculous ones,
The
because
episode where Lawrence tells the Mohammedans to shush now. Okay.
yeah, I'm happy with that. I've got some security lights and a shotgun and a knife by my bed. So, you know, it's you know, if you're coming for me, Mr. Mohammedan, bring more
Oh,
than three.
I went to the range the other day, and I suppose it is bragging, but I'm a good shot, man. I've got a
Are
natural
you?
ability at shooting. Yeah.
Oh,
This is going to become my hobby.
I'll have to take you duck shooting and pheasant shooting. It's so much fun. It's once you get your eye in, nothing makes it pass. And then you get an odd partridge that comes at you really fast. It, those country sports and all of that. I love the country. I actually wrote a little thing about how much I love the country because I have to go down to London every week to go and do some meetings and. Every time I go, I notice how vile and disgusting it is. Yesterday, I pulled up in a cab outside not a nasty hotel, and it was about 10 foot high bag of pile of bin bags, stinking bin bags, and I was just like, I feel the like rotten chicken grease on my face already. So I had to go in the hotel and have a shower. And you come back to the country and you see how much people care for things out here. You know, that just you look at the way that they prepare things, the farmers, because it's all farms around where I am, and you look at the way people look after the land, and that there's a deep connection to that reality that you just don't get in a city, and hence why we've talked about it before. You just end up with these terrible, terrible, terrible ideas in cities
Cities
that
are
come.
bad for our souls. They're bad for people. We're not made to live in cities. We need to get away from the cities.
So how has it changed for you? So what are the things that you've noticed the most since you decided to leave me by myself all alone?
But you moan a
Oh.
lot. No, I miss you. But here it's hard to describe. It's just a vibe. Like, London has felt like a bad vibe. It's dark, it's heavy, and out here it just feels lighter and more optimistic. And everywhere I go, there's something. Everything's pretty new here. I mean, people out here see things as old, and they're like, "Oh, that was built 100 years ago." So, yeah, nothing, right? But everything's very new, and they've got this mentality like, if something doesn't exist, okay, so build it, do it. I think in England we don't have that. We kind of like, everything's already established, and if it's not, then it can't be done. We're kind of a bit pessimistic in that way because everything's been around for 1,000 years. So of course it's ingrained in us, but it affects the way we see the world, I think.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. There's a hope and an optimism in America. I think it probably comes with land mass as well, because you have the land, so you can build your temple laterally rather than vertically. And I think that really helps as well. It's a strange thing, but it suits you. that you're there, and I will try and cross over with you. I need to find out whether I'm still trying to sort out the dates because I've got a really, really amenable former, and I'm trying to make sure that I can just get out and see some people and get some of that revivification that one needs, because you get, even here, I mean, I love it here. I'm so much happier than I was in London. But even here, I will go after we've had this chat, I will wander down to the pub and enjoy the sunset and have a
That's
beer.
one thing
But
I do miss, by the way, wandering. So I used to leave my house, walk to the park, do a rosary walk in the park, walk into London, walk to your studio. Like, I'm used to walking everywhere. There's just no walking here. I need to find a way to make it happen. My iPhone gave me an alert yesterday morning saying for the last 2 weeks, you have walked less miles, you have burnt fewer calories. It was like just the iPhone health app. I don't know why it gave me an alert, but it gave me an alert to say basically, since you've been in America, you're not active anymore. Of course, I
And
go
what
to the
about the
gym
woke
for.
gym?
I've been going to the gym far more, and that's not locked on the phone, obviously, but just my day-to-day life isn't as active as it was because you drive to here, you drive to there. So that's something I need to address.
You need to drive down to see me down in Alabama.
Yes. I love
Yes.
Alabama.
We'll go and shoot some full automatic Gatling guns and stuff just to make ourselves feel better.
So in my rectory, which is almost done, there's a space above the fireplace for some antlers. So I need to kill either a deer or a moose and place it up there.
That would be good. That I'd love to see that on social media. You in because we need to build towards the movie where you are like in this uniform, but like slightly possibly leather, and possibly with a like a with a sword thing. What do you put a sword in? Is it? It's no. It's not. It's scabbard. Is it scabbard? I don't know. Anyway, but your big cross double-handed sword needs to come out. So we need to do some military practice to do it. What have you got on for the rest of the week? Nearly in the rectory.
I am off to two events this week in different parts of Michigan, one for Padre Pio Medical School and one with Pastor Toma, who's hosting an event with Dr. Carson, Ben Carson, who is I'm sure you've heard his story. He's got a very good Christian conversion story of how he used to live a life of well, sin and embrace Christ and was reformed by it. It's a great story. So I'm going to go to two events, and then I've got morning prayer and mass on Sunday, evening prayer and rosary on Monday, and then I'm heading back to London, heaven forbid, for stuff that we'll talk about another time.
I know we can't talk about that stuff because it's all a bit secretive. But yeah.
Not fun stuff anyway.
I know, I know. And there's also some other stuff going on. Yeah, I'm trying to work out what we can and can't say. Not much over any of it. Well, listen, I'm still angry with you for leaving, but your beard is coming along well. You've got past the Lewis Hamilton stage, which is good,
Yeah,
and
I
you're
tried to
looking
shape it up a little
better.
bit myself the other day.
And your shoulders are looking, your shoulders, either you've changed, you've either had your thing fitted, or your shoulders are looking more like robust and strong. So
Working my
you
shoulders
are,
a lot in the gym.
are you doing shoulders in gym?
Oh,
Okay. Well, I love you, and it's good to catch up. And I think we're going to put this one out on Saturday, isn't it? Because they want to
that's what I've been
edit it
told.
properly.
So,
Yeah, we do what we're told.
yeah. We try to.
Well, God bless you, man. Love you.
You too. Love you too, brother. And see you soon. And thank you for watching. God bless.
God bless. Oh, wait. Calvin.
Yeah.
What happens if the world all goes capitalist and you have
The
no way of paying for things?
not good things happen, that's what happens. The government can control, not just monitor every penny we spend.
But what is above $2,000 an ounce?
Is it gold?
Flavor tape.
Now, as we come to the end of the show, I did promise you that we had a new sponsor.
Yes.
Sponsoring the Fox and Father show, because apparently this company, Gold Bullion Partners, a few of our listeners have decided that while being faced with the tyranny of potential digital IDs and CBDCs and what where they can keep their money safely without it being removed from the government, they have come up with the idea of gold. Well, this is actually silver.
Well, I've got some gold.
I've got some gold too! but my gold's a little one.
Well,
so,
the problem is your money isn't yours if it's in the bank, and you can't rely on it, you can't trust the banks. So we've got to invest in assets.
No capital gains tax.
That's interesting.
No capital gains tax.
I've got a lot of friends who are buying gold and silver, actually.
Yeah, non-traceable. I'm buying silver because gold's a bit up there for me at the moment. I could probably get one of these. But this is legal tender.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
You could.
I wouldn't want to spend it, though.
No, I'm just saying.
A lot of places aren't accepting legal tender anymore, and that's part of the problem. That the more we go to a cashless society, the more the government can control everything that we do. They can see every penny we spend. They can control where we spend it. That's not a good thing.
But gold and silver are holding their values beautifully in
absolutely.
The world. And in times of trouble, people tend to lean and go towards gold and silver. So, you know, Gold Bullion Partners, guys. Their link will be in the show notes. And if you so feel that you want to...
Absolutely. Do your own research. Look into it.
Yeah. And we will carry on buying it ourselves, won't we?
Yeah, we will.
A lovely man.
You too. Oh, don't forget, the culture stores are up now. Where can people go to find stuff?
Yeah. The culture stores... Oh, hang on. You sent it to me in the group. Oh, send me on that. You can go. Everyone should go here, by the way. We're about to release what I like to call the, Calvin doesn't like it, I swear, but I call it the fuck you pin, which is a heart-shaped Union Jack. So you go to theculturestores.com/foxandfather for Fox and Father merchandise. And you go to culturestores.com/, I think, my name or your name. If you want to get some pipes, or in my case, you know, t-shirts that mock Pride Month. I'm just working on the From the River to the Seaside beach bag. And yeah, it's going to be really, really, really serious and very, very.
You don't have to do like Lawrence. You can actually buy t-shirts that fit. You don't have to get one size too small.
And that's it, isn't it? It's always been the case. and then here comes the chortle. I mean, sometimes I don't know why I bother. It's like, there I am, I feel I'm close, I'm getting close, I trust you, I trust you, I trust you, and then you just rip it apart.
Yeah, well.
Well.
Thank you for watching.
Thank you for watching, thank you for bullying me.
You're welcome, anytime.
I'm gonna go and report you for a hate crime.
Well, they won't listen to you because you're right wing, so it doesn't matter.
I'm white. It's not even fair. Actually, not that matters either. I could be a wokey right winger and you'd
white,
be in trouble.
White, straight, Christian. Not good.
Yeah, I'm going to become a white net zero worshipping death cultist, and then I'm going to report you for being a racist and you'll be jailed. Ha 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 ha. And then when I turn up in court, it'll be like, you'll be like, but no one listened to me over the Kinder Andrews thing. And that white bloke called me the N-word. And he was like, yeah, but he called you the N-word because he felt it. And he really meant it. And I'll be in my rainbow t-shirt nodding. As you're put in jail for 5 years, which is where you belong.
Okay. We're done.
Bye. Bye.